my bio. Graduated Cornell Medical College in 57, followed by a four-year stint as straight medical intern and resident in medicine at Upstate Medical Center in New York, and then after 2 years in the Army, I've spent my entire career in occupational medicine, which is a branch of preventive medicine, providing preventive medical services inside of large corporations. I'm a board-certified specialist in two specialties, both internal medicine and occupational medicine, which, as I said, is a branch of preventive medicine. And I think I've already introduced my three children here today, Marjorie, Joel, and Susan, and my wife Nancy is here today, and even a nephew from Florida came up to be here this morning. Richard Seligson is here today. Yeah. Okay. Although I've been retired from active clinical medicine since 1995, low-dose naltrexone really provides the ideal way to use my medical background for a cause that's especially worthwhile. The Latin phrase, which is hard to pronounce, but it's often written out, primum non nocere, if that's the way the Latins pronounce it, nobody really knows, first do no harm, is a deeply held medical creed dating from at least Hippocrates' time. And that phrase happens to express one of the central qualities of LDN. When used correctly, it's hard to think of any medication that has less potential for harm than LDN. I recall my first reaction to hearing about low-dose naltrexone from my friend Bernie in the mid-1980s, and it was, let's get up on a rooftop and shout about it and tell the world. And that's what we've been trying to do ever since. In the early years, we tried very hard to attract philanthropic funds to see that the big clinical trials we knew had to be run would be run, and it was just impossible to get that sort of backing. And then tried to get the large pharmaceutical firms to come into Bernie's office, look at his records, look at the data. It's all there in the charts. And rarely would one of the big farms come up and take a look. The very few that did were all very, very impressed. And then it got nowhere. And finally, one of the real big ones came up one day. The chief of new drug acquisition sat there, looked at everything, said, this is very compelling. He was very interested, especially in the oncological, the cancer issues involved. And he did a couple of things. He said, in the end, when the National Institutes of Health gives it its blessing, please call us to that meeting. And then he let us in on a little secret. He said, do you know why the large pharmaceutical firms aren't showing an interest in picking this up? And we said, no, you tell us. He said, well, I've worked for all the big pharmaceutical firms. He said, and the executives have priorities at those firms. And their highest priority is to be sitting in that very chair that they're sitting in on the day they were scheduled to retire in the future. And they're not going to stick their neck out for a general practitioner at all. They're not going to risk it. So that was the message from the big pharma. As we've contacted them over the years, they seem to have a standard reply, which is, just doesn't fit into our strategy this year. Cancer, all autoimmune diseases, and AIDS. It just isn't in our strategy this year. And this is with the enormous articles that are endless in the press and in the magazines about the pipeline is drying up, they don't have new drugs, they've been making out copycat drugs, they don't know what to put out next. Really quite amazing. It's a story that's yet to be told in the future, someday. So although we certainly honor the central importance of good scientific long-term clinical trials, there's no turning our backs on the massive wall of evidence that's accumulated, the anecdotal evidence of the efficacy of low-dose naltrexone, and many or most people sitting in this room today can testify to that. We've heard a lot about it. We'll hear more. I thought for my chance to speak to you about personal experiences, since I'm not prescribing anymore, I've been out of clinical practice for a long time, I still have many personal experiences with people I've met and contacted, and I thought I'd tell you a few. There was a moment when a friend who I had played with when I was in public school, who I hadn't seen in decades and decades, who was reported that he had been out playing golf in his retirement area in Florida and had severe back pain. Turned out he had 3 pathological fractures in his vertebral column from multiple myeloma. And tracked him down, told him what his old schoolmate Bernie had discovered. He then became his oncologist's, quote, most unusual case, as his horribly abnormal and sky-high globulins in his blood dropped back into the normal range, taking low-dose naltrexone. He then, in turn, visited New York City and brought his wife along, who had autoimmune liver disease and was jaundiced. Her jaundice cleared up on low-dose naltrexone and feels fine, thank you. And on the strength of all that, his younger brother, who at that time was 65 years old and had Parkinson's disease for 10 years, thought he'd drop into Bernie by Harry's office as well. And at that time, Bernie had thought about neurodegenerative diseases like Parkinson's, that they might well be a target. And Ken, who lives in New Jersey, has not had any progression of his Parkinson's for the past, I think it's 4 or 5 years now. In contrast to the people he meets with every month in a Parkinson's group who continue to just move downhill. That's a memorable case. Another was when Nancy and I took a lovely vacation in the Netherlands in the early 2000, I think it was 2001, and it was a barge cruise. I hate going on cruises, but this was a barge cruise, and so the boat didn't rock too much. And there were only 6 cabins. Friends of ours had another cabin. And then there was a group of 4 couples who were brought together by a fellow who had been a dynamo, this terrific personality. He brought all these couples to go on this barge cruise. And the first night we had a get-together, a little party. And where was Dave? Dave was down in the cabin because Dave has a very rare autoimmune disease called Wegener's granulomatosis, and that's a rough disease. This forms granulomatous growths in the nasal and sinus areas. It affects the lower respiratory tract, the lungs, and also can knock out your kidneys to a fairly well, and very oftentimes fatal disease. Comes from Boston. He had been to every major medical center in the Boston area, and of course, they're top-notch. He had reached the point. Well, let me read you a letter that he wrote me this year summing up. He says, "My illness dates back nearly 8 years ago to 1997 at age 57. I'm going to read it fast. I returned from a trip to Hong Kong with an upper respiratory illness and a severe cough over the next 2 years, 98 and 99. Similar pattern, recurrent severe cough, sinus congestion occurred, especially after returning from trips. And then I developed temporary loss of vision in one eye. Because of the visual abnormalities, including double vision, I was admitted to Boston's Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center Hospital in March 99, underwent a variety of evaluations, including a temporal artery biopsy because of suspected vasculitis. And during the course of my evaluation, Wegener's granulomatosis was suspected based on an elevated sedimentation rate of 80. And this is the marker. This is the marker for Wegener's granulomatosis. A particular antibody, doctors for short call it the ANCA, A-N-C-A. It's the anti-neutrophil cytoplasm antibody. His level was 65. Your levels are probably 0. I had lost my energy level, couldn't walk more than 10 to 15 steps without having to rest. The pathology report of the nasal biopsy reviewed by a number of pathologists revealed necrotizing vasculitis, highly suggestive of Wegener's granulomatosis. And, of course, they began the inevitable treatments with steroids. Suppress that immune system. I was treated with prednisone steroids for 9 months, finally tapering off from 60 milligrams to a half milligram in January 2000. And then I was being carefully watched, treated by several specialists, rheumatologists and so forth, who first diagnosed the Wegener's. When I was first diagnosed with Wegener's, the ANCA was 65 in March 99. After high doses of steroids, they got it all the way down to 1 in July 99. And after being off steroids, the ANCA increased to 12 in January 2001. and to 40 in May 2001, and that's when we met Dave on this barge cruise. And we talked to him and persuaded him, and his doctor cooperated. And here's the rest of the story in brief, just a paragraph. I started using a low dose of naltrexone, 4.5 milligrams, taken before going to bed in mid-May 2001. After several weeks, I noticed a decrease in congestion and a noticeable increase in overall energy. Subsequent tests of ANCA dropped to 3.8 in December 2001, and they have been 5 in February 2003, 7 in July 2004, and in January 2005, 2.4. He says, I have maintained a high energy level equal to that of the mid-1990s, well before his illness ever began, and with a noticeable improvement in overall health. So there's another believer of the reality of low-dose naltrexone. Just 2 weeks ago, those are my son's bells. Please don't run near you. Just 2 weeks ago, a woman with lung cancer diagnosed almost 5 years ago. Try to follow this story. A woman with lung cancer diagnosed almost 5 years ago, who over these past several years has had two very serious complications, was kind enough to write the following note. Here are some excerpts from the letter from Ms. Fox. She says, I was diagnosed with lung cancer in the fall of 2000 and had surgery at Memorial Sloan Kettering in New York to remove 1.5 lobes of my right lung. After a difficult recovery and a brief return to my employment as a New York City school teacher, I chose to retire, not having sufficient strength to continue working. In the fall of 2001, I experienced a seizure, which proved to be a metastatic lesion to the brain, which traveled from the lung. Again, surgery was done at Memorial, and the tumor was removed. I eventually learned of Dr. Bihari's work with naltrexone and began taking LDN in spring of 2002. There have been virtually no side effects, and it's well tolerated in its 4.5 milligram dosage. Unfortunately, I had yet another reoccurrence of cancer in the fall of 2002. Again, a metastasis from the lung, which traveled to the liver, which was this metastasis also was again surgically removed at Sloan Kettering in December 2002. I had been on naltrexone only a few months at this time. Today, my oncologist at Sloan Kettering refers to me as, quote, the miracle child, because despite these setbacks, which are atypical, and this is an important point, as my recurrent cancers grew small and localized, don't forget that ever, and have been removed surgically without needing either radiation or chemotherapy as follow-up. She says, it is almost 5 years since I was first diagnosed with lung cancer, and I'm monitored with CAT scans and MRIs every 3 months. I'm currently cancer-free, and God willing, will remain so. Now, if you heard a story of a woman who had lung cancer, with 1.5 lungs, 1.5 lobes of one lung removed, who then went on to have metastatic brain lesion, went on to have metastases in her liver, you wouldn't at all wonder why she wasn't here at the conference today. You would wonder that she is able to even write a letter. Miss Fox is not here today because she had a prior engagement. She is on a 5-week educational tour to China. Low-dose naltrexone. The other point I want to bring out while I'm waiting for the bells to ring is a very recent article in the New England Journal of Medicine is very worth noting, and I have to bring it to your attention before I get out of here, because it flies in the face of the key received wisdom that has represented the major hurdle to low-dose naltrexone's acceptance. I'm speaking of the erroneous idea that is everywhere. It's ubiquitous. All lay people, all doctors harbor this idea that when an autoimmune disease presents itself, you're looking at the result of an over-aggressive, overactive immune system. In fact, of course, it's most likely that autoimmune diseases generally are expressions of an immunodeficiency, and there are already research articles in the literature pointing exactly in that direction, where the immune system is unable to clearly discern the difference between self and other. LDN has taught us that normalization of the immune system is what is wanted. Now, just very couple of weeks ago, May 26 issue of the New England Journal of Medicine, there's an article entitled Sagramostim for Active Crohn's Disease, done at several U.S. medical centers, including the GI unit at Mass General, and it describes the effect of an injectable treatment called granulocyte macrophage colony stimulating factor. And they ran a trial and they injected Crohn's patients and they had people on placebo. And the key thing about that substance is that it is recognized, it is known as a stimulant to the endogenous immune system in the intestinal tract. So here they're faced with a quandary. They've got the old deep belief that you've got to suppress the immune system to deal with an autoimmune disease, and yet the people who got these injections of this immune stimulant did very, very well. And that's in the New England Journal, and it's just a couple of weeks ago. And in contrast, and final thought, the New England Journal has just published online 2 days ago an early release of articles that will be coming out in its July issue about the miracle drug, which is hard to pronounce, natalizumab, which is a specific monoclonal antibody to the T-cell adhesion molecule, and clinical trials will run in MS, and it was approved by the FDA for use in MS, and also clinical trials will run, I think, in Belgium for Crohn's disease. That when you depress the immune system, here's a result that they got. They got two deaths from progressive multifocal leukoencephalopathy in the MS trial. The drug has been stopped. It's been withdrawn. And the people in Belgium went back and looked at their clinical trial in Crohn's disease. And unfortunately, there had been one person who died of a presumed brain tumor. And when they went back after learning the news from the MS trial and they reexamined the tissues and the serum, this person had died from the same leukoencephalopathy. So that's suppressing the immune system. Back in medical school, we used to have an old truism, which many of you remember, which said, half of the things we're teaching you are probably incorrect. The only problem is we don't know which half. So now, I think we're going to make strides to see that certain truths are going to emerge, and we've identified something that isn't true, and we've got something that is true. Thank you very much.